You're listening to The Weekly Show on Discourse.
So have we started?
Yeah, well, we have now. So I'm not even really sure. I'm Morgan Avery.
I'm Ben Gracewood.
I'm Dylan Reeve.
Ah.
I guess if we're going to do that, we should swap them around a little bit more.
Are you recording, by the way?
I'm Hollywood Ben Gracewood.
I'm Big Nut Dickhead Morgan Avery.
And I'm a guy, Dylan Reeve.
Still.
Suburban father of three, Dylan Reeve.
That's right.
So tell me about, like, I'm not really sure what we're going to talk about. I know, Dylan, you suggested that we do some kind of post-mortem / recap, and I don't know if that is a post-mortem of the election or a post-mortem of our election show.
I think it'll end up being both.
All right. But first I want to talk about the ridiculous engine in your new car, Ben.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
It's big. Yeah, you're like towing passenger liners or something.
No, I'm using that standard dad excuse of, you know, you need some power to get out of trouble, you know, mate. You know, you don't want an underpowered car, mate.
I think that's true. You don't want an underpowered car.
No. We're looking for a people mover, yeah. And there's a whole lot of 2-litre, 2.4-litre, you know, cars, people mover cars, and they're just pathetic. So,
and I guess a key thing is that you're not using it to commute in, right? I mean, you ride your bicycle most of the time.
Yeah, no, I ride bicycles. And the other thing is, we were car shopping, and someone made a point that you buy the car for holidaying, not for, you know, you buy the car you want to go on holiday in, apparently, is the other philosophy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I ride or drive the small car to work.
Yeah.
And we ended up with a gigantic, was it Nissan El Grande? It's amazing though for the
El Grande.
Price. El Grande. It doesn't have an E on the end though, unfortunately. It's just El Grande.
Well, you can put an E on
it. It sounds really Scientological.
I'll get a big silver E and put it on the end. But isn't it amazing what you can get? Like what the kit that these, what they call them, JDMs, Japanese domestic market, in it?
Yeah.
It's got like, you know, rear DVD screen and swiveling chairs and
chairs.
It's crazy. Yeah.
That's pretty
nutty. It's a good car. I like it. It's great fun. Ellie, I was surprised that Ellie was into it. She wanted a big van, so yeah.
So when you say swiveling chairs, do you mean the front ones?
No, the middle row spin around.
They spin around which way?
They spin around to face backwards so that, you know, you can have
like a conversation pit in the back. Oh, you've got three rows of seats.
Yeah, kind of a dining room in the back, yeah.
Why the hell have you got three rows of seats? You've only got two kids, man.
This is a van.
Sometimes you've got two kids and a dog in the back of the car.
And each kid has a friend or two often.
Nah, you've got to do away with that.
with friends.
Friends are bad influences. You just need to be the only person in their life.
Don't worry, the kids will do away with them themselves eventually.
It's my approach so far. Just be the only person in your kid's life.
I wonder if David Cunliffe has any friends.
You know what? Jeez, poor old David Cunliffe. I don't know what the hell is going to happen with the Labour Party. So none of us voted for Labour, did we?
Not a party vote.
Not a party vote, no.
That's kind of funny, isn't it? Like, we're all lefties of various different kinds. None of us voted for Labour. That says a lot, and no wonder they're so fucked.
They're uninspiring.
See, all of us could have very easily.
I was tossing it up.
We are the people they lost.
Well, no, because the Green Party would have picked up more. I mean, I don't think a lot of people... I mean, there must be a lot of swing votes in the middle, actually. I was going to say I don't imagine a lot of people go from Labour to National, but I think there actually are a lot of people who are prepared.
Well, a lot of people seem to have gone from Labour to New Zealand First, which
and Labour to
kind
National.
Of
I mean,
makes sense.
No, that, I think that's,
no,
that's,
National's got about the same votes it got last time.
Really?
Yeah.
But what about all the electorates where it was a complete opposite, and to the point that people are writing bloody petitions about it? That,
well, those people are idiots.
I know they're idiots.
In 2011, Labour won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Won the party vote in 7 electorates.
Right.
In 2014, Labour won the party vote in 5 electorates. They only lost the party vote in 2 electorates.
Right. Are you sure that National got similar party vote? I should look at the stats. I don't even have them. But
look, I'm sure I can find it all in just a moment. But yeah, they basically get about 1 million people each time. I got about 1 million votes last time and about 1 million votes this time. The difference was that everyone else got less.
What are they going to do? I still should do this research, but what did National do after their absolute routing?
Yeah, good question.
They had Stephen Joyce spent a year figuring out what was wrong with the party, trying to figure out how to reinvigorate it, and then they changed leaders to old Brash.
Yeah.
And then that made a huge change. That did, like, do you remember the Oreo speech?
Yeah.
And that really did change the party around, even though he then pretty shortly fucked off to ACT and munted that party as well. They had a deep crisis. I think possibly, pretty much where Labour is now. That is pretty much the kind of crisis they had. bad.
Am I wrong, but was John Key a ring-in? He like joined the party and then was made leader within months.
I think he'd been in for a term.
Right.
Yeah, I think he'd been in for a term. But yeah, it did seem pretty quick. Like, it's not like he'd done the hard yards. You know?
Yeah.
They seemed to just basically reinvent the party in a satisfactory way. They sorted all their shit out.
Yeah.
So here we go. 2011, the National Party got 47.3% of the vote with about 1 million votes, 1,060,000 votes, basically.
Yeah.
This year, they got 48% of the vote, so 1%, well, not even 1%, like 0.7% more. In doing so, they took, this is without specials counted, obviously, so the number's a bit under.
Preliminary.
But they took about 40,000 less votes, 50,000 less votes.
So it's all about the turnout being down then?
No, the turnout's up from last time.
The percentage turnout's up.
No, the straight numbers turnout's up as well, once the specials are considered. The last election with the specials counted was 2.257 million.
So this is where the Conservatives thing happens. So they got a shitload fewer votes, well, a lot fewer votes.
And so half went each way.
A higher percentage because...
From the Conservatives.
Basically, yeah.
So the Conservatives got 30,000 more votes than they did last time around.
So more of the turnout went to the Conservatives, basically.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you look at it and I'm like, where did all the votes go? Because
I think I can tell you. So the turnout might be the same, but it's not the same people. And the left focused really heavily, particularly the Greens, Internet Mana, and so on the youth vote. Now, we haven't really, I mean, you know, obviously this is conjecture still because we haven't got really good final numbers or any of the, you know, analysis by actual smart people who know what they're talking about. I have a feeling that all of that focus on the youth vote was wasted because those guys don't vote. They don't vote. Mm. You can focus on them all you fucking like. They'll come to your party and they'll dance to your free music and they'll chant to you. And then they won't fucking vote because the thing about youth voters is that they don't.
They don't give a shit.
They don't give a shit. And so the numbers of, and I feel like they give less and less of a shit, right?
So while the
total percentage is up, I think it's older people, people who actually slightly more consistently vote.
And so the whole don't poll landlines, so don't get the youth vote thing is the opposite, you reckon?
I think
ignore the youth vote, focus on people who vote.
That was one of the funniest tweets though I saw, which was that obviously Labour voters don't have landlines, or what was that?
No, it was Labour. It wasn't.
They don't have cars.
It was that Green voters have two landlines because they were polling. They polled much higher because the Green vote went down. Like they got less this time than last time. You know,
and everyone was
like, they're finally coming through. They're going to be
now going to be the second large party.
Every election they poll 3%, 4% above what they get.
Yeah.
I just think there's this other thing I like. And it started to occur to me really just a couple of days before the election. I was like, why the fuck do we even allow polling? Like, why do we allow the media to do polling?
Yeah.
It's completely pointless. They're polling to predict something that is, there's no point trying to predict it because it's just going to be what it is. The only thing that polling can possibly do is change that.
Yeah.
For the better or the worse, or you know, it can either discourage people from voting because they think that their vote won't count, or it can encourage.
What's it called? It's the uncertainty principle, right? By investigating something, you change it. Like, it's atomic stuff. You can either know the spin or the velocity or something, but you can't know both at once. And if you try to learn either, you change it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The active observation changes the behavior of the thing you're observing.
Mm.
And that happens. I just don't get the point of polling. Like, I mean, sure, of course, political parties are going to conduct polling. Because all that we get out of polling is pointless news stories. That's the only thing that comes out of polling.
And it's literally really expensive too to do that polling.
Yeah, but look at how many great news stories they get to have, and everyone's you know, you always focus on, well, one media outlet's always going to be a bit better than the other because their poll is better or something. It's just bullshit.
Yeah.
All of it should be stopped.
Interesting.
I actually think that maybe it should be, not because it's bullshit, but because it does have an undue influence, and it would be great if so. I mean, part of the problem with this campaign, I mean, I really enjoyed this whole campaign. It was so crazy,
so batshit insane. It was hilarious.
But one of the problems was that there was so little time for actual policy and talking about, you know, real issues. Now, I'm not saying that spying and stuff isn't a real issue. It's just, it turns out a lot of people don't care. And if people don't care, then actually it's not an issue. You know,
if a political party wants to make it an issue, they need to package it properly, because just getting some people who a very large proportion of the electorate will write off as, you know, paranoid conspiracy theorists to say they're spying on us all and it's bad isn't enough. enough. You need to really package that properly.
And 3 hours in the town hall is not packaging it properly.
Oh, no, that was terrible. But, I mean, you know, any other party could have jumped on it as well. Like Labour, you know, was kind of skating on the back of that thing, saying, you know, David Cunliffe saying, well, if I become Prime Minister, I'll immediately start a full and independent investigation into all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, but that, I mean, that's what's been interesting to me is that it's probably been the same for the last few elections, is just how good Nationals' internal polling is, their Crosby Textor stuff. Internal polling and strategy is amazing, because basically they can say that with authority, that dirty politics, regardless of the amount of truth in it, if we say it's a beat up, that's going to poll well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we say that
Kim.com is a dickhead, that's going to poll well. God, and so their research arm is amazing at this stuff. And that's, I think, what we're.
Well, their research arm is David Farrier.
David Farrier.
Sorry. No, I'm doing it now. Shit.
Well, no, it's that. Plus, I don't know if they still use them, but in the early days, they used Crosby Textor, who got the Conservatives into power and
David, in
England as well.
David Farrier is the one who got the shout out from the Prime Minister.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But this is kind of, I think that's possibly the lesson for anyone wanting to beat National next time, is basically you have to listen to the game they're playing or the line they're running and do that. What was it? The steel man on that, or you know, assume that is the correct thing because that's what they've polled and that's what's going to work.
A bunch of the lefty bloggers are making the same point, basically that National is playing the game better, and there are people on the left who'll say, well, the game is just morally wrong. We shouldn't be playing a game. This is more important than that, which is all well and good. But
you might as well not be. Your hands are tied behind your back, so you're losing the game.
Yeah, exactly.
You can argue about the rules all you like, but the other team's already playing. They've scored a bunch of goals already.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, I know I said on Discourse a few times and you know, in private many, many times, the inability of the Labour Party to control their message is unfathomable. I can't get how they can have, they have money, they can hire people who do things. Doesn't matter. Those people still can't get message across, and I'm not sure whether it's an issue to do with the way they construct policy or the people who are fronting the message.
Their strategy is absolutely shit. I mean, right back when the whole, I think it was when David Shearer came in, and there was some
one of the Davids.
There was some black and white thing that came out. You know, National did something, and the answer was obviously that's stupid. And instead, you know, Shearer stands up in front of the media and says, "Well, we'll have to research and come up with a position on this." You know, and they've been doing that ever since Shearer and Cunliffe. It's like they won't come up with a straight up, you know, every man honest answer to something that's obvious.
And that's the problem with Colin Craig, right? With the chemtrails and landing a man on the moon. He was being honest when he said he wasn't sure, but come on, mate.
So there's this other thing that I'm pretty sure I've gone into on the show, is that I think right-wing politics is simple and common sense, and I think that plays in their favour. Because I think if you look at all of the, like we talked about the Conservative Party, their little, you know, promotional issues thing, that each single point ended in a little sentence of, well, it's just common sense, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think that plays in the favour, because I think almost any, you know, broadly right-wing policy that I can think of, it doesn't need to get too deep. You know, you sort of think about it and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, any of them, like being tougher on criminals. Well, of course, they're criminals. And, you know, and lowering tax. Well, great, because then everyone will have more money. And not increasing the minimum wage. Well, obviously, it makes sense that if you increase the minimum wage, people won't have enough money and they'll have to hire fewer people. Well, obviously. It's only when the left-wing angle on all of those things requires much more nuance. And it requires, I think, more engagement from the people, from the audience to understand. You kind of have to take a political interest to get into some of those concepts, I think.
Yeah.
And it's
an interesting, you know, I mean, I don't know, this is probably just wishful thinking for me, but interesting timing stuff recently, like the climate change economic report and the Rockefellers pulling all of their money out of fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder if that sort of stuff had come a month ago or a couple of months ago, it would have given...
It doesn't matter, though, because, I mean, it's the same with those things, that, you know, like the point about trying to sell mining licenses or oil exploration licenses from New Zealand, the point is always going to be, and it's the same with asset sales, it's like, well, we have these resources and we need money, you know, we don't want to be in debt, so we have these resources, it makes sense to...
Labour's not against mining, dude.
It's just common sense.
It's not an issue. But
it's just sense. to make it take advantage of these resources that we have available to us to benefit the country. You know, and that's just simple common sense. It really simply is. And it's so easy
until you fully cost them,
Well, sure, but it's so easy then to package up and sell. You can just say this thing. It's the same with asset sales. All of them are like, obviously, if we sell them, we'll get money. It's great. But, you know, then the more complex issue is, well, what about the cost of actually doing the selling? And they don't return as much money as we hoped. And then we don't get the ongoing revenue from the asset. But you know, we just sell the things. We get money.
It's so easy, in fact, to package it up that they trust that fuckwit Simon Bridges to do the job.
Exactly.
He's so awful.
So what now positives. What about the positives? No Colin Craig.
Our show started on time and almost finished on time.
Yeah.
Well, it started on time and mostly went
10 minutes late. Properly.
No fucking around trying to decide on who's in government. No Winston the Kingmaker.
You say that, except they're still going to give bloody the David Seymour, the young act lad, is going to get some sort of ministerial position.
Well, he's very well experienced in the educational portfolio, Dylan. Didn't you know he was pivotal.
As much as he's been a student until just now.
and he helped John Banks craft the charter schools policy.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
right. Yeah. Charter schools, what a glorious success.
I don't get why is he getting a ministerial portfolio? They don't need to offer him anything.
I think it's really simple. I think so they said, as part of their campaign, steady as she goes, let's not change course halfway through. And so they've got to stay with the same crew. It's the same reason they're going to have Māori. It's the same reason. Yeah. Well, it sounds like they're going to have the same three other parties in their little coalition.
Possibly with less power, but yeah.
Well, probably with less power. Certainly, the leverage isn't the same. But
I've got
the
another positive then. We don't have to have any of those awkward uncertainties on upcoming legislation about whether it'll pass or not.
Yeah, well, that's a shame.
Don't have to worry about any of that anymore.
Well, let's not forget that last term, gay marriage equality did pass.
Yes, that was
it was a private member's bill. Vote. Yeah. So it is possible to do interesting things, even when, you know.
I think it's possible for some other parties to get interesting things to happen. I don't think it's possible for any other parties to stop any national policy.
It will be really terrible if they continue abusing urgency like they have.
Yeah, maybe. Do they even need to? I don't know.
Well, they want to get things done. The point of urgency is that it's faster.
Yeah, it's more urgent.
Yeah.
Was this a year that they are planning to abolish mandated tea breaks?
Oh, I haven't heard anything.
That's part of their employment policy. So no more whatever it is, 10 or 15 minute breaks every however many hours it's supposed to be.
That sounds like a terrible idea. People do need to have breaks. Their work efficiency plummets if you don't have breaks.
That's fine. I think you'll find that the employers are much better at figuring out when these things should be.
Leave it entirely up to employers, what you get is children down coal mines.
Well, I mean, they're small and they've got nimble fingers. So
if you leave it just up to the employers, you get no annual leave. You get 80 hour weeks. You get no minimum wage. You've got to be grateful for whatever scraps you get if you leave it up to the employer. Not all employers, of course, but enough that it's a real the invisible hand of the market is a bit of a psychopath.
I mean that is an interesting fundamental question, right? About how much things have changed since deregulation in the 80s. I don't know. I don't want to get too deep in it, but shit's changed.
Everyone has more annual leave. Probably we work a bit longer, but that might just be a normal thing. I mean, I think that could have happened regardless because, you know, lots of technology changes. I think our efficiency is pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't feel hard done by with my leave, though. Do you guys feel hard done by with your leave?
No,
I'm pretty happy with the number of hours I work a week.
4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I think I get 5 weeks.
I kind of occasionally wonder about, you know, you drive past construction sites these days and they're working all day, every day, Saturday, Sunday, you know.
Do you want your bloody cheap housing or not?
What cheap housing is that?
Well, it'll eventually.
And that's one thing that's definitely not going to happen because, I mean, I think that there could have been something quite, you know, potentially quite interesting if we did do the Labour's proposed 100,000 houses thing. If they had been designed really well, and I have no confidence that they would be. And maybe we can talk a little bit about Key's moves for a referendum on changing the flag because that's also going to be a problem there. But if they'd been designed well, and there's no reason that they shouldn't be because we've got some fucking great architects in New Zealand. build. And in fact, we could just have, you know, an international competition to design like 10 templates or something and then just produce them by the 100, you know, just churn them out in a factory and plop them into...
See, I'm convinced...
Isn't National getting us 80,000 houses with modifying the RMA and freeing up some land? I thought that was...
I wouldn't trust their RMA changes.
Well, why would you not trust that when you trust Labour to build 100,000 houses?
I don't actually trust Labour to build 100,000 houses. But I think they would have given it a better crack. Because, I mean, the National one, that won't be the government building them. That'll be property developers who have proven themselves to be incapable of building really nice houses lately,
yeah,
frankly.
For good value, yeah.
They seem to have just made them more and more expensive, ever more expensive, even though some of the construction stuff seems to be a lot more efficient and in some ways a lot easier. You know, this stuff where, you know, you build all your walls, modular walls, in a climate-controlled factory somewhere, and then you basically, you know, you get your groundworks done, and then you staple the walls to your platform and you build your house in about 2 days.
Yeah.
That stuff is much more efficient than it used to be.
This is all, you know, like right-wing, left-wing, you know, government-driven versus private-driven, that sort of stuff. Do you think, like, I wrote that blog post before the election saying nothing's going to change dramatically, and it won't. You know, there's just
won't for us, like you and me, and
more minor tweaks and that sort of stuff. But do you think anyone ever gets to kind of a "I told you so" moment? Like, do you ever get to that point where they'd create houses through urban sprawl and the traffic gets fucked, and we have to then spend millions of dollars on transport, and someone can say, yeah, "Hey, I told you so. This didn't work." Or the other way around, where suddenly
we do have people saying "I told you so," but it's about mistakes that were made in the 1950s with Auckland's transport network, right? So all of the people who fucked that up willfully, I think, with like the Harbour Bridge and so on, they don't give a shit because they're all dead. You know, a lot of this really, but I mean, the stuff where we actually care about the, you know, central government being involved, that tends to be pretty long-term projects.
Yeah.
You know, that's not 100,000 houses in a year. That's 100,000 houses in a decade. And, you know, I don't expect it would actually happen that quickly, but it would be something.
Seeing
the actual end result of those, it would take a lot longer than that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be 30-40 years before we get the chance to say "I told you so."
Yeah, so but massive confirmation bias, right? Because obviously I'm horribly blinkered, pinko, liberal, left-wing wanker. Yeah. But what...
I certainly agree with the last point.
What left-wing social policies have had the effect that we're allowed to look back on them in 20 years, 40 years ago and say look how much that fucked us up?
Yeah, pretty much.
Versus deregulation and other stuff.
No, I mean, you could probably do that theoretically with something. You could look at things like long hospital wait times and inefficiencies in some socialized services and say, well, I bet the private sector could have done that better, or if we, you know, privatize these aspects of it, we'd get a better result for it.
And they kind of did, right? Telecom's much better performing, but then again, we've got this fucking network that's uninvested and we've had to pay to replace it.
Yep.
You know?
And I actually believe that something like telecom could potentially have been run more efficiently as a government-owned enterprise, because I think that people forget about profit. You know, the hundreds of millions of dollars of profit extraction that was happening every year for quite a long time from telecom, that is money that was not reinvested. And, you know, possibly if it had still been government-owned, it would just be returned as a dividend to the government and it'd disappear. But also, probably, more of it would have been reinvested in the network and the infrastructure. So I don't know about this inefficiency that people claim.
The argument in favour there, though, is that the efficiency of telecom as a private company versus the post office as the post office that ran the telephone systems before that was marked and quite dramatic in quite a short time after it was privatised.
Yeah, well, it's about the quality of management, isn't it?
Well, it's that, and they made a you know, a big investment to start with to justify, you know, what would become their profit model.
Yeah.
And then after that, they didn't need to.
Yeah, I think that you can have improvements in efficiency and management without changing
it. It just wasn't.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't. And you know, of course, now we'll never know.
No.
I mean, something had to change. And it just so happens that the extraordinarily hard right-wingers were in charge of the Labour Party at the time. And so it was them that did it.
Mm.
But I mean, you think ultimately, you know, even with the National Party in power, New Zealand is still a pretty socialist nation.
Like,
You know, we're not getting rid of a large scale public health system. We're not shutting down welfare for most people. You know, we have a reasonably good public funded education system. You know, none of those things are going away. They could be better, and they could, you know, they'll people will tinker with them, but they're not going away. No political party is, even, you know, even on the hard right, even the Conservatives and the ACT parties aren't sort of standing on the sidelines saying, well, we'll do away with all of this. these things. They might say that, you know, we think this thing should be dramatically changed in this way, but fundamentally they all sort of stay around.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to change. I think we, you know, like, and that's why I think for most people, the difference between National and Labour is probably on a day-to-day thing is quite minimal. But
so do
in the more macro thing, it's probably...
Yeah. You know, so do we end up then with the Labour Party running up to the next election, bashing beneficiaries?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's what wins. I think
polls well, obviously, for National.
No, but it polls well for National. It doesn't poll, you know, you can't, like, Labour can't suddenly switch to out National.
Well, they did once before, and National switched
to out Labouring Labour.
Exactly.
They adopted a hell of a lot of Labour's policies.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they still dress it up, right? I mean, you can't have, you know, Labour, who's a party that, you know, has long been associated with, well, the labour unions and things, can't suddenly take those positions.
Yeah, but wait a second. What you just said is exactly right. Labour is associated with people who work. That's what the long association has been. Not with fucking beneficiaries who don't work.
Yeah.
Labour is about people who do the job.
My understanding is that's why Shearer was torpedoed so hard, is that he was trying to pull Labour back to the centre and, you know, looking at cutting down, you know, coming down on beneficiaries and that sort of stuff. And that was what kind of caused the coup, as opposed to his poor.
I don't think there's a problem with Labour policy, particularly. I mean, some of their policies are stupid, but
They did talk about fucking GST free fruit and vegetables.
I've never forgiven them for that. But
it's so stupid.
The issue is less about that and more about communicating their policy. Like they're uninspiring in their message.
Well, who was it that said if you're explaining, you're losing?
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing. I think that's the advantage that the simplistic ideas of right wing politics have, is that they don't need much explaining.
Yeah.
You just say less tax, and everyone's like, "Yeah, that's a good idea. I'd like to pay less to the government each year, you know, each week." Whereas the left has to say no less tax, or maybe even a little bit more tax, but this and this and this, and everyone's like, they just stop listening at more tax.
Mm.
Well, not everyone.
No, but you know, the people who are possibly going to shift one way or another in any given election.
I saw these stories in advance of the election, and you know, about the ongoing campaign that Campbell was involved in, lunches in schools, you know, hungry kids with no shoes, all of that sob story stuff. It really does bother me that would be the case in New Zealand. I don't feel like food is a shortage in this country. I don't feel like money is so tight that we can't feed
those kids. John Key once said we have a great capacity to produce food, quote unquote.
Yeah. But then you get the people writing the letters to the editor about the 2 wheat books costing 69 cents. Like, there's a disconnect. And so it's easy for the right wing to say, well, we don't need to deal with this issue. The issue is obviously parents.
It's the parents.
But it's very hard for the left wing to say, well, you know, it might be sometimes, but in many cases, it's this and this and this and this and this, because everyone's shut down at two Weet-Bix cost 69 cents.
Yeah.
Or whatever the, you know, I don't know if you saw the letter, but whatever the letter to the Herald said, it was ridiculous. It was just absurd.
We just wait for the eventual change to come. That's probably what pisses me off the most, actually. I mean, as a kind of Greenian advocate of clean tech, what angers me the most about what's going to happen now is that we will eventually get there. We'll eventually follow the rest of the world on a massive revolution towards clean tech.
But we're just stalled for another 3 years.
Yeah, but we should be leaders. Our brand is perfect.
That's
to be
exactly
leaders in this
right.
Thing.
And this is what I've been saying as well for I don't know a while. We should be leading everything. We should be the best because we're little. We've got amazing resources that we're just wasting.
Yeah.
Well, you think we're small. We should be agile.
Yeah.
That's the main thing that I think is, you know, it's not hard for a country the size of New Zealand to make large scale change.
We live in the most beautiful country in the world.
Yeah, and it's not a big deal if we don't, you know. That's the thing, is that it sucks, but we'll get there. We'll wake up and we'll go, oh, okay, all right, everyone's doing solar panels and fucking electric cars, I guess we will too. And you know,
but there are first mover advantages.
Yeah.
Right? Because if we could lead on some of this stuff, then you know, we would be the guys that, you know, we'd have companies selling our knowledge and how to do it to other countries.
We need to get John Key to read The Innovator's Dilemma or something like that and understand, you know, kind of, we're gonna get just rolled over.
He's actually, you know, he's a bit relaxed about it all.
The end of the day.
I think, you know, as long as ACT only get 14,000 party votes, not not too much damage is going to be done, right? And listen, now this is going to sound like, oh, you're fucking fishing again. As long as the fishing community and the hunting community is as broad as it is, we're going to protect motherfuckers, man, because we have an interest in having clean waterways. And, you know, I'm not one of the super rich guys that the National Party actually gives a fuck about. But when I'm out there on, you know, our little boat, I'm out there with guys on big fucking boats, and they're also fishers, right? So they're out there on their $2 million fucking launch, and they are also voters, and they're also employers, right? Mm. So there are multiple ways to attack any issue. And I'm really... So Gareth,
imagine if National did that. Imagine if National came out and said, "This is the plan. Yeah. You know, we're gonna smash our economy, and we're gonna absolutely, you know what I mean. We're gonna smash it. We're gonna be amazing in these ways through doing this stuff, yeah, while also, you know, tidying up, you know, and becoming world leaders in amazing grass fed, you know, clean tech dairy."
Yeah.
Fuck, man, they would be in with a grin. They'd be in permanently. You know, you'd never be able to vote them out.
I'd vote for someone who did that.
Yeah,
I kind of did. Unfortunately, they're too little, and they've still got a tinge of the fringe about them. So Gareth Morgan today wrote about, and is going to write more tomorrow, aka yesterday for podcast listeners, about his proposal for a blue-green party. This is a centrist or even right-wing environmentally conscious party, which I really I want to see more about what his idea is. And he's saying he's not going to fund it or be involved at all. It's just he's basically talking through a hole in his hat. But I'm really interested to see what he has to say, because that's something I think I said on election night as well, that and in the week running up to the election, I don't really understand why environmental stuff, thinking long, has to be left or right. It's short or long, right? It's about not thinking about this financial quarter. It's short or a little bit not short now as well.
It's not even long anymore.
It depends on where the blue part of it comes from, because if the blue part's coming from the you know, the government, the small government, little regulation, don't impede business things, then the problem is that environmentalism can kind of counter those things. It needs, you know, some big government stuff, it needs regulation, and it may, you know, may result in a higher cost of business for some, specifically, you know, things like farming businesses, which are, you know, so I think that's always been the problem that Nationals have with those. And I don't know whether they really believe their bullshit on some of it, but I think, you know, it appeals to the farmy heartland base that doesn't want to be paying taxes for their cow shit.
Yeah. What's the banned 1080 party's policy on school lunches?
I think their policy is probably that school lunches should not include 1080.
What's the Aotearoa Legalized Cannabis Party's policy on snapper quotas?
As long as the snapper is larger than the smallest joint you have on board, then it's fine.
See, those parties don't have policy. Well, they might have policies on those things, but they're not known for it. I'm not really clear on why. Now, we wouldn't be able to call it the Green Party, but let's say
the Aquamarine.
How about lowercase g Green Party, an environmental party? I'm not clear on why an environmental party needs to have social policies in particular, when really it's just about saying, listen, these things are environmental issues. Don't give a fuck about economics specifically, but this is too important to worry about that other stuff. And
see, that was,
you just
that
occupy
was my
the middle
about,
ground.
About the idea of the internet party as well, as I thought there was a place for a party like that was really just focused on technology,
yeah,
you know, on our place in the world of the internet and technology and, you know,
yeah,
ICT.
There's no votes
in that. Well, why not?
Well, there's not 5% of votes, that's for fucking sure.
Well, there wasn't for the internet party as it ended up being, that's for certain. But I think there could be for, you know, a party that truly represents the interests of, except that probably it's young people, and young people don't vote, as we know. Although they've always been a desirable demographic. People have gone after them many times. It's just no one seems
doesn't
to
fucking work. Desirable for the left, and the left seems to like losing elections, apparently. You don't see the right going after the youth demographic, do you?
No, the ACT used to. Still does, probably.
Yeah, look how well they're doing. 14,000 votes in the country. That's the margin of some winning candidates. And
there's so much stuff. I've got all the raw data that I got from the election results website that I was using to power our graphics. There's so many things I want to sort of mine into it and find out. Like, I'd like to know which electorate had the highest proportion of party vote for ACT.
Right.
I don't know what it is.
It would be very low anywhere.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's probably not Epsom, though.
No, I wouldn't think so. Epsom didn't
It'd be somewhere weird full of pillocks. Not wishing to sound too terribly biased. So do you want to talk a little bit about how the show went?
So we had a lot of big plans. We thought, among other things, we identified some issues we had last time, such as graphics not working quite right, such as not having any sort of breaks that would allow presenters to go pee, for example. So this year we addressed those things by having the graphics not work properly and not having any breaks for you guys to go and pee.
I felt like there were pretty good breaks, but I didn't see anyone go for a pee even during those breaks.
They were very unpredictable. I'm surprised that James didn't, because he was nicking those beers back pretty good.
It's good stuff, that epic beer, man. I don't blame him.
Yeah. Went through a lot of that. We ate quite a bit of Mexican food.
That Mexicali Fresh, I might have only had it once before. It's really good.
It's pretty good.
I know, it is literally my favorite thing to buy. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I wouldn't have approached them to give us food if I didn't really like them already, and I really like them.
I'm a bit jaded because they're just across the road, and I get a bit of a match, but it's good. It's great food.
The problem I have is I don't go there very often, and when I do go there, I stand there and I look at the menu, and I'm like, wow, look at all there's all these things I quite like to have. Like, I love soft tacos.
Just get the pork.
All I ever get is the burrito, because I know I love the burrito and it's big and it's filling, and I only ever get the beef one because I really like the barbecue or beef.
But pork. Get the pork.
Or chicken. Yeah. The chicken's really good too.
Get the pork, you fool.
Their chicken is good. Their chicken is kind of citrusy. It's really good. It's quite yum. It's kind of limey.
My problem is I need to go much more often so I can actually go through the menu. But I'm always afraid of doing something that doesn't satisfy me as much as I know the thing that I do want will satisfy me.
I got so frustrated by the Delicious Cupcakes, bless their hearts, but their cupcake parliament just... I wanted people to ice stuff, and I got so worked up about it, and then I ended up just getting...
Ruining it
for everyone. I just over-iced.
You will not be allowed to ice in future. I'm just going to put that out there.
I was amazed at the amount of scandal that produced.
It really bothered me. After seeing how good John Key's cupcake came out, we had some serious icing talent in the audience there, and you just went and sprayed it all over the place.
But we needed to get a move on, because
you just spooged it.
We had hours. There was no hurry. There was no.
So I would say a couple of things that we need to remember to change for next time. Now, number one, this is not my number one, but I'm going to do it. Number one, we need to have set times when we go and add to the cupcakes so that Ben doesn't get antsy.
That's a good idea. We should
like every 30 like, minutes or something.
Yeah, every 30 minutes we go and see how many more cupcakes we can add. That's
we're like
idea.
What? How many can we definitely put down now? And you know, it might be actually that we should start by putting down 40 National and 10 Labour.
Well, I think what you look at
three grid.
So when we started, the very first result, we already had like straight off the bat, we had something like 11% of the vote, or 16% of the vote, something like that. It was quite straight off.
Yeah.
I think you could probably say, look, you know, once you get to 25%, you can probably say, you know, I'm going to look at these numbers, and I'm going to ice a quarter of them.
Plus or minus, you know, five or 10 seats per party.
Well, you just say no. You say, you know, if someone has, if the results at this point, 25% of the way into the election, are saying that the New Zealand First Party has 10 seats, then I'm going to ice two or three of them, because I'm pretty sure that it's not going to change that much.
Yeah.
If it says National Party has 60 seats, I'm going to ice 15 of them, because I'm, you know, or even 30, because I know that's not going to change.
We should have thought of this stuff. That's amazing.
That's good. That's
we
how
probably
we do
won't remember in 3 years' time.
So actually, what you're saying is we shouldn't do it based on like 30-minute increments, but when we've got 25%, 50%, 75% of the vote,
so what
then
I'll try and do is I'll try and get the graphics to work next time completely, and I'll make a graphic that illustrates the projected icing needs.
The projected cupcakes.
Yeah,
that's a great idea. They could even have circular seats.
They could, except that the idea of doing that made me very confused this time. So what went wrong with the graphics was interesting. There were two things that happened.
Hang on a second. Is it going to be interesting for our listeners, or is it just interesting for you?
It's maybe interesting for me.
Why did it fall behind?
All right, go on.
Well, so there were two things that happened. The first thing was, for some reason, because the testing I'd done was mostly based on static data, the Electoral Commission did a couple of run-throughs for the media before the thing, but I only managed to catch one of them live, just based on the timings.
Yeah.
And that one worked at that stage pretty much how I expected it would, but there were still things I added after that. But at that point, I was working with static data. It wasn't changing. And what I didn't realize, the mistake I'd made, was that I'd built the ability to keep sending information to the ticker to keep updating it, but I wasn't sending it. I thought that every time I got new electorate data, I was sending new electorate information to the ticker, but I wasn't. I changed that about halfway through. I quickly, because I was running my graphics management software out of the debugger, I managed to quickly make some edits and run it again.
That shows a great deal of confidence.
Well, I was like, this is going to go wrong. I know it's going to go wrong, so I'm not going to compile and install this anymore. I'm just going to run it out of Visual Studio.
Smart.
So I did.
Yeah.
So that was fine. The other thing that went wrong was, for some reason, some of my graphics templates, and I still don't understand why this happened, would come up and display as they were supposed to, but either as they displayed or when they went away, they would destroy the alpha channel.
Oh, is that the one that just stayed black?
Yeah, so they'd go up. And then the only way I could get those to, I could get the thing reset back to how it should be, is I would actually have to restart the graphics server and then just bring up the ones that didn't do that, which thankfully the main ones, which were the little clock thing that displayed the vote count and the ticker, which displayed, you know, the you know, constantly updating, well, eventually updating list of electorates and their results, those things were working fine. And the basic baselines worked fine, but some of the others did not work. The prettier ones, the more informative ones, did not work properly.
Right.
And there was also some delays created by the way I was handling the data that I didn't anticipate properly. So there were some times where I'd try and do something and the front end interface was locked up because it was busy dealing with some data in the back in the back end. So I shall learn to thread properly next time. I shall use a proper database next time instead of flat files. I shall, there's a whole lot of stuff.
I mean, by next time, the that code will be 6 years old?
The problem is, no, because it was all rewritten from scratch this time because I lost the last lot.
Oh.
So I rewrote.
Did you think of talking to Dan about it?
I got some of the Flash code back, but the problem is Dan is so much more familiar with ActionScript than I am that I had trouble deciphering a lot of that.
Because he'd have like the really sophisticated code and you'd be like, what does it do? I'm just like reading Perl.
Precisely. And we were passing data differently last time, which caused a whole lot of problems last time, which was that his code was reading XML files from a web server that I was running, except that that caused a whole lot of issues because there was all this cross-domain stuff that Flash didn't like.
I thought it was hilarious having those earpieces and just how fucking irritating they were.
Yeah, so there's a few things there as well. I mean, IFBs was important because we need to be able to communicate with it. It's called IFBs. I can't remember what that stands for.
But it's a real insight to me about how hard that must be for real TV people to deal with. I presume they must have some protocol around not saying anything until there's a pause or something. Or
No,
it'd be pretty much constant. I think it's something you learn really easily, actually. It's just a little bit of exposure to get used to it.
So there's a funny thing.
Because I just found myself like I was replying to you and then realizing, hang on, people watching the stream will just see me saying, yep. I agree. Yeah.
I was doing that as well, but I was doing it for fun.
Yeah. So there's a thing I used to work on. I worked briefly on the Mike King show. Do you remember the second incarnation, not the first one, not the one that he used to do in like but he did it at a studio and Joe Cotton used to go out and do live bits back to the studio. Anyway, I worked on that and that was a show for Touchdown at the time, or iWorks maybe it was called then, I don't know. And he was not a very experienced presenter, and he had the director or the producer talking in his ear constantly, and it was clearly messing him up.
Right.
But it was happening all the time, and she was a bit of a control freak who wouldn't not do it.
Right.
And I was having to edit the show, and sort of the way we were doing it was that we were editing it straight after, you know, as it was being shot, and it was very difficult, and it was not working because he'd clearly messed things up because he was being distracted by someone talking in his ear because he wasn't really used to it. I can't do it. I've tried. It doesn't. I'm terrible at it.
The thing that really messes me up, and it's something that we only had really briefly right at the beginning, and that is my own voice slightly delayed and then repeated back to me.
That's the speech jammer. We were speech jamming you accidentally.
Yeah, it was fixed really quickly. Wendy, I think Wendy was like, even, is this currently bloody blah? And I was like, yep. And then she just turned it down, and that was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, it was a little tricky setup the way we had it set up to feed audio back into your ears. It was slightly complicated by the fact it was the audio system was a bit ad hoc compared to how normal people would do it.
I was amazed by, you know, like I was trying to relay it to people that, you know, sometimes you get together and have a LAN game, or you might get together and have a hackathon with your coding friends. Yeah. But when your friends get together, Dylan, it's like acres of cable and everything has 10 plugs in the back of it with 3 wires plugged into it.
So we had four.
It was unbelievable.
Sorry, we had 3, for what it's worth, 3 XDCam HD cameras. I mean, if you were buying them, they're, you know, they're 100K a piece kind of thing. So we had 3 of those.
We had $300,000 worth of those cameras.
Yep, so we had $300,000 worth of those cameras, tripods, or vision switches. The vision switch was probably another, you know, 10K with all its bits and pieces. You probably had like $200,000 worth of equipment when you consider everything that was there, plus like 150 meters of cable. We had, one of the cameras was wireless. That was really important to me because I wanted to be able to move it around the studio. So we had
10 lights.
So it was wireless. We had a bunch of lights. We had those
remote ones
for you. We had the remote camera, which was fun, and I'm really excited that that worked
as well. And now if it had like a light panel or something on it, then that would have made a big difference.
Totally. thought we were going to send one out, just forgot to in the heat of the moment. It got all very panicky about 6:45 when there were a few things still not working,
yeah.
And you guys had to go and shoot a thing across the road, and it was all just kind of not going together. And so I was like being pulled in about four different directions, and I just didn't even think to make sure that was a thing that we'd done. It worked really well. The live camera system was built. There's a piece of hardware you can get called a live stream broadcaster. You know when you see all those protest videos, you know, there's like there was a whole lot of Ferguson and Occupy Wall Street before that, and people are streaming from, not from cell phones, but from proper video cameras, live onto the internet. Well, we were doing that. So there's a piece of thing you can get called a live stream broadcaster. It's a little orange box that sits on top of the camera. It costs, I think it's like $500. It's not very expensive. Runs on three AA batteries. You can either plug a USB, like a USB modem into it, like a little USB stick modem, 4G thing, or you can plug a LAN cable into it, or it can connect to a Wi-Fi hotspot. So ours was connected to a Huawei 4G hotspot that Spark provided.
It was cool of Spark to give us that thing as well.
Yep, I have to give it back, unfortunately, because it's fun to play with.
It was a completely unintentional oversight that I didn't thank them during the wrap up, but you know.
Oh, they were cool. They said don't worry about it, because I did ask. I was like, now do you want us to acknowledge that you've given us this? Because if it all falls apart, it could look like your thing broke, and I'm sure it won't be that. And it never was that. None of the problems we had with our live broadcast had anything to do with 4G coverage. That all worked great.
It worked great, and the picture was actually good as well. Just a little bit dark, but it was clearly good.
Wasn't even the highest quality. We could have actually gone higher quality on the picture too. But so that was fun. We sent Ryan, and unfortunately, you know, we sent Ryan and Josh and Tamar out, and it was a shame because I'd hoped that Josh Drummond would be able to have more of a part, but he went with Ryan, and we didn't really get to see him as much as I would have liked, because he had a Surface with him and was going to do some live sketching as we went through, but it just didn't.
He was clearly a really funny dude.
He's great.
Yeah.
So that was really neat. We also had Skype. We could do Skype. Theoretically, we had a phone number. We could have had people Skype call us, but that took long enough to get set up that it wasn't really worth it anymore.
Yeah, I would have told people the number if I felt confident that they'd be able to actually call.
Yeah. It took probably halfway through the show before we could, because the problem with Skype was that we could call people and we could hear what they were saying, but they couldn't hear us, which is obviously pointless. You can't have a one-way telephone conversation.
We did have that call to London.
Yeah, that was after that. We got the call to London sorted out. We did a call to Ben Uffendale over Skype as well.
Was I really rude to him? I can't remember exactly
what I said. No, you weren't nearly as rude as you could have been. And we tried to call a prominent right-wing blogger, but it just went to voicemail.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was funny. I got a little maybe I shouldn't talk too much, a little bit. I mean, this whole thing's been a bit inside baseball. I got some shit about having Bevan on the show in advance.
Oh, yeah.
I think she was really good, and all of the feedback was really positive about it. And people said that it was great to have a right-winger on there, and that she presented herself well.
She was good, and she joined the – she had the right vibe for the – you know, she wasn't taking herself too seriously. She wasn't being a dick about anything.
So I hope the people that told me in advance, quietly, mainly in DMs, that I was making a terrible mistake, I hope that they will – hope that they've changed their minds about that, you know, because that other thing that happened, that's you know, everyone's made mistakes.
Well, it's good, and it's good that never came up, because it wasn't relevant, and I'm pleased it didn't. I was worried a little bit that someone might say, you know, I was like, oh god, I hope it doesn't turn ugly, but it never did, and that's good.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed expected, but disappointed in her answer to the whole, you know, dirty politics, does it happen on both sides thing. You know, that's a cop-out to me, but it's an interesting...
What was her answer? I probably wasn't.
Yes. Everyone does it.
Yeah. Everyone does it. Everyone does death threats and fucking character assassination.
You know what? I think it's true, depending on how you want to look at it. There are certainly people on both sides who do it, no question. I just think it's even just an extension of the efficiency of the right-wing in their messaging. But
who does vitriol and character assassination on the left?
Well, I don't know that anyone does it as big as they do, but there are definitely, you know, people...
It's beyond just vitriol. I mean, obviously there are rude pricks on the left, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
The difference is that they're not using public offices to do it, right? They're just dumb pricks on the internet. Yeah. But that was, you know, people in John Key's office, right? That was you know, illegally controlling the release of OIAs and so on, right?
I don't know that yet. It was
I think assumptions. We can be pretty sure about that. I think we can be pretty sure.
Yeah.
I think depending on how you want to look at it, you can say that it happens in both cases. I don't think it's really true that it does, but I think it's easy enough for people to say that it does without being you know, without being too disingenuous.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, that's that comes right back to what I was saying before about that, that polls well, and that is, you say it enough and people believe it, and that's kind of what you've got, you know, what Labour and the Greens have to work out a way to battle, is that, you know, John Key saying, I'm relaxed about it, I've got other opinions, I've got other, you know, other people who tell me different things.
Yeah.
That works. Yeah. It absolutely,
well, it's funny,
works.
Isn't it? Because we think that's one of the worst things, you know, we're like, oh, I can't, how can anyone vote for that idiot? And the people who are supporting him going, yeah, that's good. He's, you know, he's thinking about the things he should be thinking about, not this ridiculousness.
Yeah. Yeah. So
he's so
response
certain.
His response to scientific fact is his, you know, just a certain assuredness that it's actually the other way around.
I've got scientists who'll say other things.
Yeah. How do you haven't. How do you compete with that?
Yeah.
Apart from saying, you know, show me the money.
And that's the part of the game that they don't want to play. You know, that's the part of the thing where you don't want to go into that situation of being like, well, that's just bullshit. You don't want to be in that part of the game where you're saying things.
Maybe you do.
They'll work.
Did you see Radio New Zealand's fact check site? It's amazing, man. You scroll down not everything, but there were four or five things in kind of every appearance or every speech that were just outright lies and bullshit.
There's that list that people maintain. I think it's on Reddit, was the last person I saw it, but it's like 156 lies of John Key. Yeah, and it's a whole lot of things that John Key has said really clearly that have quite obviously not been true.
Yeah. Election 2014, fact or fiction, if you go to Radio New Zealand and search for that, and it's a big long list of all the things that you know, Paula Bennett says there are 30,000 fewer children on benefits than 2 years ago, you know, and it's not true.
Yeah, it's the truthiness. They've got the truthiness on their side. Speaking of truthiness, did you see, not really speaking of truthiness, but that's like, truthiness is Stephen Colbert, and then Stephen Colbert reminds me of John Oliver, and John Oliver made fun of our election.
Yep.
Quite delightful.
Yeah, I did.
He also made fun of our accent, which some
made fun of Katie Bradford's accent,
which some people didn't think was very good, and I thought it was fantastic.
I thought it was pretty well done.
It's the Hell Yes version, right? And I don't actually feel like Katie Bradford speaks like that, and I feel like no one else in the entire piece that he showed the clip from spoke like that. But Katie Bradford speaks a little bit like that, and yeah, I mean, he was talking a lot of bloody bollocks. I mean, what was that about wallabies? Fuck's sake!
I don't know. Is that a thing?
I was wondering, maybe there is a problem with wallabies in the South Island.
There was a problem with wallabies on the Hauraki Gulf Islands. So, I mean, it's possible. But it just sounds like bollocks to me. I mean, our problems are with, like, possums, right?
John Oliver's not known for making shit up.
Well, maybe he made shit up about that for the sake of a joke that no one would ever bother checking him on. Let's see. Wallabies and...
Big bounce in South Island wallaby numbers. This is from March 2014. South Canterbury farmers are struggling to control rising wallaby numbers.
Fuck, we should bloody shoot them.
During the past 2 years, Tim Morrow has spent $24,000 on a program to poison wallabies on the 5,000-hectare sheep and beef farm he manages.
Stupid. That's pointless.
Recreational hunters also kill 2,000 wallabies on the property annually. 2,000 wallabies
like
a year.
On one farm.
On one farm.
That'd be great fun.
Oh, he wins. He's right.
Do you want to go and have a discourse shooting day down in South Canterbury?
I'll take my bow and arrow.
You would have to be pretty good. I remember of them on the islands on Motutapu.
They bounce along at a rapid rate.
And they are flighty.
You need to be within probably about 30 metres max to hit them with a bow as well.
Yeah.
That would be really hard.
Yeah. Be a good challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we care about the strife in Labour? None of us is Labour supporters, but we are all approximately lefties. So I care
about it in as much as I think. You know, every time, it doesn't happen often, but every time the All Blacks lose a game, right, that's some game that they should have won, there's outrage and we fire the coach.
Yeah.
This is the same bullshit. Like that's not fixing the problem. All that's doing is distracting you and making it worse. Like,
getting rid of the guy that's now experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this thing called being blooded, right? There's an advantage that veteran troops have over green soldiers, you know? I'm not making an allusion to the Green Party there.
Also, I mean, I don't want to say it out loud, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've been thinking about one particular candidate that keeps being brought up as a potential Labour leader.
Not Shearer, though.
But as much as I think it's an important thing, I just think that New Zealand is not ready for a gay prime minister, ministerial candidate.
Who's that, Parker?
Grant Robertson.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, and that sucks, but it's just another reason for people to not vote.
I don't know, man. I don't think...
Well, they said that. They said that about a black prison in the States, and that worked out all right for them. That was exactly the same. You know, when it was the primaries race between Hillary...
Do you really think
so,
though? I mean, Jeff Swilling barbecuing John Key versus...
But when it was the primary race between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, there were people decrying that the Democrats were throwing the election away because either way, it was going to be a choice that a lot of people wouldn't go for, a woman or a black man as president.
Yeah.
And they were wrong. And, you know, maybe they'll be proven wrong in the next election as well if Hillary Clinton...
I really hope that we could be proven wrong on that.
But I don't think that's the issue. I don't think even if he becomes the leader, I don't think he'll become the prime minister if they don't sort out the rest of their shit first.
That's exactly right. Their problem is not their leader.
Their problem is the perception that their leader is a problem. That's the thing, is that they let that be the problem. Yeah.
I meant to say this before. This, what's wrong is their strategists and their polling and the way they decide. Well, no, it's the way they decide to react and respond to things. What they choose is talking points. You know, everything.
No, their caucus is a large part. Look, fundamentally, if you look at it, you think, you know, even if I agree with the Labour Party, could I trust them to run the government when they can't sort their own shit out?
Imagine a scenario where someone was planning on rolling John Key. It just wouldn't happen. He's the leader. No one would consider it for a second.
It wouldn't happen. And if it did happen, the first you'd hear about it was when it happened. You wouldn't hear like weeks and months of scuttlebutt about it, and then there wouldn't be all these ridiculous factions
coming out publicly. No, but surely you can't even imagine it happening, right?
No, not really.
This point, you can't imagine it happening.
Of course not.
Labour, like the last three leaders, it's just been inevitable.
Yeah.
I think you probably couldn't have imagined it happening to Helen either.
No.
And so they've got to sort that out. But yeah, that party has a lot that it needs to sort out, and they've got a little bit of time to do it. But they got to not rush into choosing a new leader. They need to realise that Cunliffe. I mean, he may have been a problem, but he wasn't the problem. And I think that Shearer would have lost probably about as badly. I think it's a red herring that it was at 35% when he was replaced, or whatever. That was something like 35%, right?
Yep.
I think that's a red herring. And just imagine David Shearer in the debates with John Key. He would have been just completely destroyed. Because do you think so? I am absolutely certain about it, because remember him debating head-to-head with Cunliffe. Cunliffe fucked him up, and they still chose Shearer because of the ABCs, right? It was under the old regime where it was the caucus that had, you know, the deciding vote. The membership didn't really get a look in. Cunliffe smashed him. I think it was on Campbell, or it was on the previous incarnation of Close Up or something. Cunliffe was sharp and Shearer was flaffy. That's not a word, I know, but you know what I mean.
No, flaffy's totally a word.
Yeah, totally flaffy.
And he would have got just as munted. Now, I mean, you know, you can't rerun history, obviously, but I think that it was up at 35%. It was, I mean, the peak was pretty high during the leadership campaign, where they were so collegial, all three of them. Cunliffe and what was the guy that got the like ambassador to the Pacific? What was that prick's name? The guy that was wanking and on the
Jones.
Yeah, Shane Jones and whoever else it was. The party went really high in the polls during that period because the Labour Party was getting lots of coverage
in the news,
and it wasn't about like they weren't trying to drag each other down. They were trying to just boost themselves the most. If that makes sense. Yeah. It started high, and I think anyone, whoever had come out of that, would have ended up, I think, losing to John Key.
Yeah, the Labour Party wasn't really positioned to win.
No.
The thing that's really interesting to me is that I don't think this result surprised the National Party. I think it surprised the Labour Party. I think it surprised the Greens. Probably surprised Colin Craig.
Surprised a lot of Twitter.
But I don't think any of it surprised the National Party. I think they had a much better grasp on what was really going to happen than we did.
I think that we were trying to... I think we were willfully misleading ourselves, and actually all of the indications were that it was probably going to be national, and if it wasn't national, it would be just by the barest skin of the teeth, right?
Yeah, well, that was, you know, everyone was looking at the polls and going, well, if this happened and this happened, then this and this and this and this
and
this.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the Labour Party could stand on everyone else's shoulders.
Potentially and form with these five other parties.
Yeah, and they could wear a big trench coat and it could look like a really tall single party.
Imagine that, though. Like, seriously, no matter how you feel about national, imagine that bunch of people running the country.
Yeah.
Ah,
and imagine that, how long it would have taken to form a government. Who would have got?
We've been there before. You
know, who would have got bloody ministerial positions? It would have been a shit fight.
Everyone.
Yeah.
You get a position.
Well, I mean, look at it. Where Greens and New Zealand First is so close as well, and that, you know, so Greens wouldn't kind of have a leg to stand on to say they wanted the deputy prime minister role.
Yeah. Unless you had three deputy prime ministers.
The deputy prime ministers. Yeah.
Could have been good for a laugh.
No, it is what it is. But I think that, look, because there was a little insightful thing, accidentally perhaps, Courier Research called Russell Brown.
Oh, I saw that.
And he posted basically a transcript of their polling call, which made it really clear that National were doing a lot of research about what people were actually doing and thinking.
Well, so
I
don't
think
were,
they
were
surprised. You know, I think they knew.
Again, that's where they won, and they polled on a fact that, you know, that was going to be a mishmash, you know, kind of disorganized shamble on the left, and so questions on that.
When do you think we're going to hear from Kim.com next? I almost think it's probably not going. We're probably barely going to hear from him until he finally has his hearing.
Yeah, he knows that people are just not interested.
There were
a lot of us who weren't interested a long bloody time ago. Right?
Yeah, I mean that's the one thing that I think is probably the saddest thing about this election is Hone. You know, no matter what you think about his politics, he's a good career politician who knows his shit, and he got torpedoed by.
I'm not convinced that he did though. He isn't in, but I'm not convinced it was .com's fault. I mean,
yeah, of course it was.
Like, I live in Te Tai Tokoro.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and, live in like the bottom eighth of 1% of it.
Well, even but just in the part that I'm in,
and it's not tea.
Fine.
It's Te.
Te Tai Tokoro.
It's always Te. T-E is always Te. That's how the fucking language works. Really fucking simple.
I know. But there was...
Well, listen, there is one thing that we can do better than Radio New Zealand, and that's our... Now, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I make lots of mistakes.
No, there isn't.
But we can get our pronunciation better than those assholes. They do even worse than you. They don't do T. They do fucking Tay.
Anyway, and Te Tai Tokoro...
It's regional dialects.
No.
I think it might be. I'm not going to argue.
No.
The part that I'm living in, there was a lot of Kelvin Davis
signage,
like a lot. In fact, he was the only National Party signage I saw around here. Really,
yeah. Labour Party.
Sorry, Labour Party signage that I saw around here, and Phil Twyford still won in Te Aro 2.
Yeah,
but like you know, there was quite a lot of stuff. The Mana Party here wasn't as big. Thank you.
Oh fuck! Sorry, I keep making noise.
So, is it time to revisit the threshold? I mean, I don't think National are going to be interested in that. But
no, I don't think there's a problem with it.
I think you're mistaken, and there clearly is a problem with it.
Well,
and the commission said that there's a problem with it.
They suggested 4%, didn't they?
They suggested 4%, and I think that they were being overly cautious. So 4%. Graham Edgler on
is about 85,000 votes. I suppose. I mean, well, if someone gets 85,000 votes.
That's a lot of votes.
Quite a lot of support.
Well, we don't need to guess. Well, elections would not be the same with no threshold. People would vote differently. But if there'd been no threshold, Graham Edgell has run all the numbers on public address on his Legal Beagle column. National 57, ACT 1, United Future 1. So that's 59, right? Conservatives 5, so that's 64. So, you know, that's not terribly different in terms of number of parties than they currently have. And it would be a right-wing government, right? Māori Party 2, same as they've got now. New Zealand First 11, I think that's the same as they've got now. Yeah. Labour 30, I don't think, is that?
Two less.
That's two less. Greens would be 12. I think, is that one more?
One less.
Internet Mana would be 2, right? So there's only two different parties. It's Conservatives with 5, which they fucking well deserve, and it's Internet Mana with 2, which they probably deserve because a whole lot of people voted for them. Internet Mana, 26,000 party votes.
That's not a lot.
It's not a hell of a lot, but it's over 1%. It's 1.25%.
I don't know. I just feel like, you know, 20,000 people spread across all of New Zealand is not a mandate to have.
It's not a mandate to lead the fucking country, but it might be enough to say that you should have a seat.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because if you look at it as like to win an electorate, like most of the electorates need about 30,000 people to win. So if you look at that and you sort of drew that as the benchmark,
yeah, then it's about it would be out, and Māori would be out.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
except they got an electorate, one electorate.
1.5% there, roughly.
Yeah.
You know, on the current numbers, it might be more if, you know, more people actually voted. But
it's hard to say that the Conservatives, now the threshold is 5%. There's no getting away from that fact. But it's hard to say that the Conservatives don't deserve a place in Parliament with 86,000 votes. So, you know, and they were over that 4% mark.
I'm completely wrong on the number, though.
Were you?
Yeah.
What percentage would it be?
Well, I don't know. No, the number that I thought it would take to win a seat is actually much less than.
It's about 12,000 to get one of the strongest margins was 12,000. I don't know what the total votes were.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the places we could look. Like, I don't know. So, it's about, I think each electorate has 70,000 people in it, something like that.
Yeah, and if you count on about a third of them not voting,
it's
between a quarter and a third.
Mm. Yeah, so I don't know how much it would need to be, but I think it would probably be worthwhile looking at that as a guideline. Like, what does it take to win?
Electric.
How many votes account for an electorate win, which looks like it's about between sort of 10 and 20,000 people voting for a candidate is enough for that person to win.
Yeah.
So is there anything else to discuss on the Discourse Election Politics podcast?
No, just technology, really.
This is a politics podcast, isn't it?
No, it's a technology podcast. We're talking about the technology of making an election television show.
It's a fishing podcast.
It's a comedy politics fishing podcast.
Comedy politics fishing.
We're not doing very technology. Well on the comedy front this week. Comedy. So on The Nation, is it The Nation? Or was it
on
Sunday morning, Patrick Gower? So he interviewed, I've already put their fucking White, Jamie White and David Seymour from the ACT Party. And he asked a question about you know, what had gone wrong to David Seymour. And he said, I'm not looking backwards, I'm looking forwards. And Patrick Gower immediately said, I'm not looking backwards, I'm looking at the results. You're not a real political movement. And then later on, when he was throwing to the next piece, he said, who are the winners and losers of Decision 2014? I've certainly got some losers here with me. And he was sitting right next to the fucking ACT guys. God, it was hilarious. I used to really dislike Patrick Gower, I think during the Labour leadership squabble. For whatever reason, I don't even know. I can't even tell you why I disliked it, but it felt really weird at the time. But I like him so much now. He's so funny. And he's obviously loving it.
Have you, speaking of ACT, have you seen the likenesses of David Seymour with Rimmer?
Yeah.
From Seven, and the one with,
God,
with Lister. With one with Seymour and Danny White standing beside Lister and Rimmer.
Yeah.
And so what I didn't realise was that my first Lister and Rimmer, you mean Crichton and Rimmer.
Yeah, he means Crichton.
My first foray into election broadcasting was in 2005, and it was on Triangle TV, and we did a show called Votes!
Yeah.
Exclamation point.
Yeah.
And we had David Seymour as a guest. He was one of our panelists.
Maybe he's helping us.
And unfortunately, I've got a tape somewhere, but I don't have a way of playing it at the moment. I'll have to try and play it at some point and maybe digitize it, see how we go.
Would that be worth trying to do next time? Trying to get on an actual TV channel?
Well, what actual TV channel?
I don't know, something on Freeview. There must be someone.
Yeah, I suppose we could see if Choice TV.
Like, the problem is the listenership by 5 or 10.
It does reduce the the chances of our sweariness. It does reduce our option for sweariness and
oh, look, I cannot swear.
And defamation.
I cannot swear. It's fine. What defamation? What's your name? Oh, yeah, there was a little bit, right? We did have that discussion. Yeah, but, I mean, we can understand our context and we can work within any kind of strictures, you know?
Yeah.
It would be nice to have a slightly larger audience. I'm not sure if we would. I don't know how many people watch Choice.
That was just one I was thinking of that doesn't otherwise, that you know, is locally programmed or doesn't otherwise have something on.
TV Shopping Network.
Seems unlikely.
No, they need every minute they can possibly sell whatever the hell they...
Isn't there like three of those?
How are there three? I've literally never watched any of them for longer than it takes to flick past. Like, I don't even pause, because why would you pause?
Someone said there were three and I was like, that can't be true.
And they're all New Zealand made.
Yes. Oh, I don't know. One of them might be from Australia, I think.
Yeah. I remember being contacted in the early days of those and wanting to find to sell, you know, be a gadget selling guy. And
I had a similar approach.
No, thank you.
I wasn't even going to have to sell. I was just going to be doing like back-end reviews and writing stuff for someone else to front, but that never happened.
Yeah. Oh, God.
What happened to the old gadget days, Ben?
He rage quit on Paul Henry and won't touch him anymore.
No, you still do Radio NZ though, right? But it's not really gadgets. It's kind of web stuff.
Web stories, internet and things.
Yeah.
I kind of got over it, to be honest. I never thought I would, but I got over the boxes of phones and, you know, shit.
Gadgets are bullshit.
It's hard as well. Like, you know, the thing is that doing, you know, especially on breakfast and stuff, where they want something interesting every time, and all you get from PR is, here's 10 new Android phones from, you know, from Samsung, and three new cameras, and a new fucking kitchen whiz.
And none of them are interesting.
Give me something I can fly at Paul Henry on the set.
Exactly.
Something that has a chance of catching fire.
Ideally.
Ideally.
Go on.
Anything else? Any other news?
Well, no, the Auckland City Council is still reckon that there's a chance that we can get our central rail link, inner city rail link, started before
2020. I hope so. I'm also looking for some $100 million of cycleways.
Why does it need to cost so much for cycleways?
New York spent $30 million.
That seems like a much bigger city than Auckland, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I guess it's a little island, really.
It's a little island. It's already got a lot of paving.
Yeah.
All they really need to do is just, you know, slice some off the side and say,
so that's all you need to do here as well.
What makes me most angry about the cycleway thing, we're doing a thing in Te Aroha, and we posted to the Te Aroha Facebook page, and there was just all these people saying, no, it can't work here because everyone needs to drive to the shops, and it's just not going to work in New Zealand. It works in other places.
It works everywhere. It's been tried.
Well, exactly, and the lack of understanding that it works out everywhere because they built fucking cycle infrastructure everywhere.
Because cars don't go to the shops, they go past the shops.
Also,
bicycles are within the environment, within the community, not bubbles of isolation.
But it's more the point that these other places have lots of cyclists and lots of infrastructure because they built cycling infrastructure before people were using it.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't get
if you build it, they will come.
Exactly. It's literally a example of that.
Yeah. So it turns out that they are actually going to make a Deadpool movie.
Ah.
So after we saw that test footage, I don't know, like a month ago or whenever it was leaked with Ryan Reynolds, it was fantastic. It was hilarious. And it's going to be released, I think, in 2016. But unfortunately, the rumor is that they're aiming for PG-13, and Deadpool should not be PG-13.
No. Yeah. How's Interstellar coming along? That's what I want to watch. I feel like it's going to be the next Contact, and I really liked Contact.
Contact. That was Jodie Foster with the things. Yeah. Why build one for a billion when you can do two for twice the price or whatever?
Yeah,
I liked that movie. It was very frustrating.
Yeah, I like high concept sci-fi. I'm a total sucker.
Yeah.
Looking forward to Interstellar. Mm.
All right. Well, I think that probably will do, actually. Wait, is this short? Oh, this is actually a long episode.
It's a long episode.
Wow. Did I get completely lost? I felt like it had been...
It's not as long as you think it is from looking at the time of the call, because we spent, you know, forever on it before we got Ben.
Oh, that would be quite a relief, because for some reason, Ben speaking, I think I can see how long you've been in the call for.
I think on my end, it's only reporting 1.5 hours.
Ah.
Only.
Hmm. Well, that was good. Hey, I really enjoyed making the show with you guys.
It was fun. We should do it again in 3 years. Someone said we should do it more often, and I said it would kill us.
Well, like for local body?
Yeah, well, I'm like, what? That was the other thing. I was like, what other special events could we perceivably make live ridiculous shows for?
You know,
if in the next 3 years, like, you know, the Queen dies and there's a new coronation, but that would not work because there's no point doing a live show from here for that.
No.
So, no, nothing.
We just make a live election results show every Saturday night, and every now and then there's an election, and most of the time we drink sponsored beer and eat sponsored cupcakes and sponsored delicious Mexican food and talk garbage with
Imagine setting up and packing down that thing every weekend.
No, if we're going to do that, we need to get a little bit of funding, and we'll set up a permanent flyaway kit that's much better established.
You're right, Ben. Instead of having all of that kit, setting it up in some remote place, we could all like just be in our individual homes.
Yep.
And given that, you know, the location wouldn't change much, and you know what we all look like, we could just do it audio only.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could do that. We could do that every single week. We could record, let's say, on a Tuesday, release on Thursday mornings. We could call it the Discourse Weekly Show.
No, that's not going to work.
Oh, wait a fucking second. Wait a second.
So wait, where's the beer and cupcakes and Mexican food?
In my fridge.
I took home a large swathe of refried beans, and they've gone quite far.
Yum. Oh, I'm so disappointed to hear that's where they went. Love those refried beans.
Mm.
It's good stuff, eh?
Anyway.
Yeah, that was great. Very successful show, and the response on Twitter was really cool. It's just
always hilarious.
I wish there'd been more people watching. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not good at promotion. I've proven time and time again that I'm not good at promotion. And you did your best.
I tried.
And I don't know. next time we just, I guess, maybe we need to have an actual meeting in advance.
How much does, like, I've always looked at this, how much do, like, Phantom Bill stickers cost? Are they lots?
I know the guy who owns that company. Maybe I can get a good deal.
There you go. Why don't we do that? Put, like bloody billboards around the place.
Well, the main reason is that things cost money, but if we can wrangle things that don't cost that much money, I'm sure we can manage something.
I would spend money. I just wouldn't spend a lot of money.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, some things take a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I also hope that, I mean, everyone had a good time, and one of the people I brought along, who I borrowed stuff from last year, but I didn't really invite him to come play, was Chris Barr from DUT.
Last
election. It's so easy to do that.
Yeah.
And this year I said, come along, please come along and help. And he had a great time. So
yeah, cool.
That's good.
That helps us.
Yeah, I was kind of worried that you guys would have a good time, but then when I cleaned up afterwards, the amount of beer bottles around behind the
it's fun. There's a whole other side of it from back there, of the chaos and the amusement and
Kind of lower consequence playing around, right?
Yeah,
same gear, but less pressure.
Well, the thing is, for him, like, he sells this gear, but doesn't, there's only so much you can kind of test in your, in your sales room. You can plug a couple of cameras in and go, look, see, I press this button and this one comes online. I press this button, this one comes online. Yay. But the actual, that and then using it in anger are very different things. So I think it was the first time for him that he'd tried to do a lot of the sort of stuff we did and really had that experience of unpacking it all, putting it together and making a thing that people watched.
Yeah, a real shakedown.
Yeah, totally. And there was a few little problems we had to figure ways around.
Mm.
And that was, I think, was all really good.
Such good people. Yeah. I really enjoy doing it. And, I don't think I could actually stand doing it more than every 3 years, but it's great doing it every 3 years. And I hope we can keep doing it for a really long time because it really is fun. And I mean, obviously we can get Ben to commit to doing it once every 3 years.
Barely. When I realized by committing to Ben that meant I was going to be the last person to leave, I was like, shit.
Wasn't that bad? We were out by like 4:15.
No, it was great. It was really good. I was worried I was going to be there till like 1 a.m. packing up shit.
I hope cleaning. That the audience behind us had a good time. The people I spoke to seemed to.
We had some issues. They couldn't, for the first sort of 45 minutes, they couldn't hear anything that you guys were saying.
Tough.
We sorted that out. Yeah. That's another thing. It's just things you didn't consider. I didn't really think about how the audience would work as to whether or not they could hear us. And then, so, if I'd thought about that ahead of time, we would have arranged for a few extra speakers to be installed around back there.
Right. I need a bigger screen as well. I couldn't really see it.
Yeah, I meant to bring my TV in from home. I forgot to do that. So,
That's right. I brought the TV last time.
Yeah. So,
oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Right. Anyway, it was cool. It was great. And so was this. And it's good to talk to both of you guys. It's almost like the old days. And next week,
back to technology and comedy.
Next week, we'll have, we won't have Ben, we'll have someone else. And I don't even know what it's going to be about.
Have a fishing show. Get the fishing guy on.
Matt Watson.
Yeah.
I'd be rude about some of the shows, man. I don't think I should.
And I'd just zone out completely.
And I'd be rude about this. He's kind of got this, I don't know why, but he's got a woman as a sort of a co-host on some of them, and she's terrible. She doesn't know anything, and I don't understand why she's there except for
eye candy.
Yeah, exactly, and that bothers me.
That's not cool.
No, it's not cool, and that might not be it. There might be some other thing at play, and it's just not working. It's just not working. But when it's good, it's great. He had one episode, I don't know, like 4 or 5 weeks ago, where he didn't take his normal crew. He just had a Zoom H4n and a waterproof box plugged in with a couple of cameras going through waterproof gaskets and a whole lot of GoPros all around the boat, and it was probably the best episode he's ever made, and it was it was so good, so simple and so good. Anyway, okay,
night.
Good night. See one of you again next week, and thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Fish and chaps. This show is cancelled. Beep.